With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
Here we go. That is the signal to commence, I believe. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Trying to make today make sense as best we can. Molly's out today. I think she mentioned that yesterday. She's in the field doing actual reporting and journalism stuff. Kimberly Adams is on the line. Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
You know, same, same. Thursday. Thursday.
Thursday. That's, yeah. That's what thanks for having me back.
That's what I got.
So,
yeah, no, thanks
if
for coming.
You are. Thank you. Happy to be here. All the pleasantries. If you're joining us for the first time, today is what we sometimes call hallowed out shell of a Thursday.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah, buddy. So we'll do a little news, we'll do a little make me smile, and then we will get out of your hair. You get to go first. You are the honored guest.
Why, thank you, Kai. I appreciate that. Mine is an extra downer. It's about my hometown story out of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch because, you know, I only come on this show to, you know, bring the dark place sting into the mix whenever it's possible. COVID-19 cases are just really spiking in my hometown and throughout the Midwest and the upper Midwest right now. And I look at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I listen to KWMU, which is a local public radio station in St. Louis, because that's where my family is. And, you know, to keep an eye on things. And it's not good. I was listening to KWMU this morning and they were saying in the starkest of tones, like, please, everyone, put on a mask for the love of God, because cases are up, the hospitals are getting full. You know, it's just bad. And being on the East Coast and you being out in L.A., my sister lives in New York City. We've seen how bad it can get. And I don't wish that on anyone. And so to see those cases really starting to tick up in my hometown just worries me to death. And then I talk to my friends back there and I hear about how it's affecting their lives financially. A good friend of mine who I've known since kindergarten was just telling me that she and her husband and their kids, they have to relocate because their local store where her husband was working is shutting down. And so they're being relocated to Springfield, Illinois. And she's really worried because they don't do as good a job at masking there, she claims. And it's just, I just wish that we could do better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody thinks masks are essential, but nobody seems to.
Not everybody. Not everybody.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. I don't know.
And it's interesting because there have been so many different arguments made for masking. First, there was a health argument. You will literally save people's lives. Then there was the economic argument. You will boost GDP if everybody just wears a mask. Then there was a school argument. We can reopen the schools if everybody wears a mask. And now we've cycled back to please wear a mask to save people's lives. And I wonder what argument is going to work. And then you shared that really interesting article on Twitter today with this great visualization.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
That was so good. Where was that from? Mm-hmm.
It was from El País. I will Google it while you describe it, and we'll get it in the show.
Yeah, so
sure.
Basically, so it's this really great data visualization of how COVID spreads, or COVID-19 spreads in various settings. And they dug into the research and all of this real life examples and created these visualizations of how COVID-19 might spread in a bar or in a schoolroom, a classroom, or in a living room if you're hanging out with five or six people. And then how the infection rate changes depending on if people are wearing masks, if the room is ventilated, if social distancing is done. And it really shows, based on research, how much these small changes can really make a difference in whether or not people get sick. And I say whether or not people get sick because obviously people have different reactions to this virus. But we're heading into the winter where scientists tell us the virus can survive longer in the air, and this thing can hang out in the air for hours. And I just wish that people would do better. That's all I want.
Do better.
It's for all of us to do better. Yes, be best. Let's channel some Melania Trump and be best. That's what I got.
Oh my goodness. All right, so I got two things, but they're both kind of quick. Excuse me. Number one, Steven Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, and Nancy Pelosi are done playing nice. So Pelosi releases a letter.
Were they ever playing nice, honestly?
Well, they put on the facade, right? They're like, we're having good discussions, this and that. We're still apart on some key things, but we're talking and this and that, right? And that was the whole deal until it all fell apart like in the last 10 days, as we all who were watching this knew that it would. So last night at midnight, Pelosi sends to Mnuchin and releases to the press at the same time a long list of here's where the administration said they were going to get back to us, here's where we don't agree, and why don't you do better. And Mnuchin writes a letter back to Pelosi today that says, Dear Speaker Pelosi, I woke up this morning and read your letter to me in the press. Because you sent it to my office at midnight and simultaneously released it to the press, I can unfortunately only conclude that it is a political stunt. So for anybody who is holding out hope of any kind of relief package in this economy anytime, like in this millennium, it is not happening. It's not, because the gloves are off.
I mean, the tit for tat is sure, like, I love the crows that are hanging out at your house, by the way.
Sorry, they're outside my shed here. I have, yes.
No, I think that's great. I am a big fan of the crows. But this tit for tat on social media and in the press and whatever, it's like snappy headlines and great for hot takes. But oh my goodness, the costs and the stakes of this. Businesses are still shutting down. People are running out of, you know, their unemployment assistance. The lines at food banks are getting longer. People are still, somehow people are working around. Yeah. I mean, Amy Scott and others have done really great reporting on Marketplace about sort of the ways that people are getting around the eviction moratoriums. And I just, you know, on the one hand, like, I get it. Everybody has each side has what they're trying to accomplish, and they feel very deeply that what they're trying to accomplish is worth sticking it out. But while this happens, there is just so much damage still happening in the economy and so many people still suffering. And I really do fear that it's going to get worse. And I hope that once the election passes, at least, that maybe some of the incentive will return. But I'm not exactly optimistic, because right now there's no incentive because there's about to be an election to come to a deal. So does that mean we're waiting until January for aid to come to people when it's cold outside in a lot of places and unemployment insurance definitely doesn't last that long?
I think we're waiting past January, right? Because, I mean, let's game this out. Let's say Democrats take the Senate and hold the House with big majority, right? And that Biden wins. So the House and Senate come back into session on the 3rd of January. Let's say they start working on a relief bill or pass a relief bill that day.
Well, the House has already passed a relief bill.
Yeah, the House already has, but it'll be a new session, so they'll have to pass it fresh, right? Biden will, and I hate this usage, but it's what the politicians love to say, on day one, even if he signs that on his way back from the inauguration on the 20th at 12:05 or whatever it is after the lunch that they have, it'll take weeks for anything to get out to people. Weeks at best. Yeah. So we're like at February, you know? And that's
it's
if there's
a
unified
hard
government.
Winter
yeah.
for people.
It's going to be a long, hard winter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, very quick transition to item number two, which is that during that long, hard winter when people can't go out because the virus is raging, essential workers will still be going out, some of them of whom work for Amazon, which released earnings this afternoon, and these numbers are just staggering, and I just want to mention them. Net sales in the third quarter, only in 3 months, $96 billion, up 37% from a year ago. So those are just staggering numbers, as we can see by all the Amazon trucks driving up and down. The one little tidbit that I love out of this, though, how much they're paying for shipping worldwide to get all that stuff to us next day? $15 billion in shipping. That's just a lot of boxes and trucks and planes, and it's kind of wild. And that's, you know, that's the way this economy is changing.
I also love that very high up in that press release that you linked to is them sort of congratulating themselves on raising their minimum wage to $15 an hour and kind of casting shade on others in the industry for not. When at the same time, there's been a lot of reporting and complaints about how Amazon has been treating its workers in the pandemic in terms of hazard pay and how all of this increased demand has put increased stress on these workers. But they did sort of step forward on that, you know, sort of the response to the fight for 15, as they called it. But it will... But yeah, essential workers have been out there and are still out there, and many of them are not making a living wage still. And the sort of hero pay and the hazard pay and all these things we heard early in the pandemic have not lasted. And many people expected at the beginning that they wouldn't. And how folks who still have to be out and about in the world manage through this long, hard winter is going to be... A real testament to resilience, if anything else.
For sure.
Hollowed
right,
out shall love
Drew,
a Thursday.
Hit the button. Hit the button. Hit the button. Hit the
button. Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
Okay, I want to go first because I feel like I kind of have to caveat myself here, because I know one of the last times I was on the show with you, I gave you a hard time because I didn't really think your Make Me Smile was actually a Make Me Smile. And I'm right on the edge of this, but I'd like you to give me a chance to say why this is a Make Me Smile.
I'm all curious now.
This is a story in the Star-Telegram about all of these people who have just jumped through all sorts of hoops to vote in Texas. Because as we're seeing across the country, there are big efforts at what is frankly voter suppression, the idea of limiting people's ability to vote or making it harder to vote or by adding additional layers of verification, just, you know, making it take longer to the point that some people who are eligible to vote are really going to struggle. So there's a story in the Star-Telegram, and I'm about Meredith Riley, who drove nearly 1,400 miles. She's studying at American University in Washington, D.C., and she drove 20 hours to Fort Worth to cast her American University is in D.C. She drove 20 hours to Fort Worth to cast her ballot on Wednesday. I'm reading directly from the story here. She and a friend who lives in Austin and also attends American University rented a car and made the overnight drive to Texas, stopping only briefly at a Tennessee motel to sleep for a few hours. Neither of us were planning on coming home. We just had to make sure our votes counted for the presidential election as well as down ballot. So they were eligible to vote. They tried to vote absentee. Something got mucked up in the process. And so they drove 20 hours. Now, this would not be a make me smile because this should not be happening. But this is another example amid many examples that I have seen in my reporting and the reporting of others throughout this election of people really stepping up in this election to actively participate in the this democracy in a way that I haven't seen before. And I've been covering presidential elections since 2000, when I will not talk about age here. But the point being that I have never seen so many people stepping outside of themselves and giving of their time and going above and beyond to participate in the democracy, to make sure their votes are counted, to make sure the votes of others are counted, and to make sure that people across the political spectrum have access to vote. And that makes me smile.
There you go. I'll give you that one. I'll give you that. Okay. No, you caveated it appropriately, but I will absolutely give you that one for sure.
Okay. Okay.
For
Thank
sure.
You.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And you know what? I think we'll just go out on that one. I think we'll just go out on that one because that is profound in many, many ways and speaks to the moment. And mine, frankly, was just flip, and I don't want to be flip. So we will end it there. We are done on a Thursday. Molly, I think, is back tomorrow. I don't even know.
She said she was going to be here for the happy hour.
Oh, for Economics on Tap. All right. Good. Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so we're out of here. A couple of quick things as we go. Number one, all y'all are signed up for the newsletter, right? Every Friday morning, super early, get you up on some of the week's news, recommendations from listeners like you, also good books, podcasts, articles, all the stuff that is making you and all of us smart. Look, we need those recommendations. So if you've got a recommendation or you want to just chit-chat with Erica, I mean, you know, she'll do it. Email it to smarter@marketplace.org. That's a new one. smarter@marketplace.org. Hit that up.
I love that email. All right, that is it for this hollowed out shell of a Thursday. Molly will be back tomorrow for Economics on Tap and the YouTube live stream. That's at 3:30 p.m. Pacific or 6:30 p.m. Eastern, which is the best time zone because I'm here.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Ethan Peretz is our beloved intern, Erica Phillips. Well, I already gave her the credit. Let's move on.
Yeah. And she does a smart speaker skill as well.
Yeah,
all right, today's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. Our senior producer today and executive director of On Demand is Satara Nieves.
Getting her hands dirty doing actual producing today.
Yeah, it's not like she's ever done that before.
Like riding a bike.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.